Anyway, enough of that. Good morning, everybody. And actually, I'm recording on two recorders right now because I've been having trouble with my recorder. But I'm switching my system, so, you know, everything is. And Mercury is in retrograde. Do you notice that, Bruce? I don't know if you follow astrology, but. What else again? Yeah, no, it's famous for electronic communication disruptions. So, and yes. And actually, you know what, because it's actually not in retrograde, it's actually just going along in its same orbit as it always does. But from the Earth's perspective, because of where our position is, it appears to be going backwards in its orbit. And so, kind of like when you watch wheels rolling on a TV show and they appear to be going backwards, it's kind of like that. But I'm pointing as I'm speaking. You can picture that, yeah. Yes. Exactly. This is what I'm talking about. But really what's happening there, and I think this is more than likely, it has something to do with we get, all this rays from the sun that, you know, come directly at us and they, I'm not going to go into all the chemistry physics of it, but they go to the ionosphere and the ionosphere of the Earth here is kind of where all this electrical stuff is happening. And when there's disruptions in the ionosphere, it causes disruptions in a lot of other things, electronic. We don't recognize that our bodies run on electricity. That we are electrical beings as well. And we are affected by these things just as much as, I can't describe it, in technical terms. I just know it because it's impossible for it not to be. It's impossible for us not to be affected. So maybe when Mercury is in that particular phase of its orbit or our orbit, it's disrupting some of these rays that are hitting our ionosphere. And maybe that's what's causing disruptions. I don't know. I'm making a story up. But it seems to work. So, that's over, thousands and millions of years, we've noticed this happening. And just now we're giving it a name because we have a... But it happens periodically, and that's how people know that it's, it must be that time because it's periodically in that orbit. Anyway, I don't want to go into any more of that because it's rambling. I love it. That's, yes, perfect. Oh, my gosh. All right. So, I'm going on and rambling and haven't even introduced us. Welcome to The Journey Home with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And we are reading the book, The Journey Home, by Ken Wapnick, Dr. Kenneth Wapnick, who is our beloved teacher of A Course in Miracles. And The book is based on the obstacles to peace from A Course in Miracles. And so right now, Mercury being in retrograde, my Kindle version is not opening up yet. So maybe... Oh, really? Aha! Uh-huh. Well, I guess you do know a little bit about astrology. Yeah, but it's something you studied in high school. Right, exactly. And I like, and it's interesting that you called it the pre-shadow. The pre-shadow, and we're in the pre-shadow. We're not in the shadow yet. And the shadow would imply that the light is not coming because there's something in the way. This is really interesting. It reminds me of today's lesson, right? I'm the light of the world. Always has it, always will. Isn't that just amazing? I mean, it of course, that's, you know, has to do with the sun, but it also has to do with the reality of ourselves and our connection to our source. It always has and always will. There will never be a shadow or anything between us. I love it. Even though the sun will burn out someday. So. Exactly. All right. So I hope this is recording good. It appears to be. I don't know. My Skype is acting weird. Every time I get a update, it seems like they like to mess with you. All right. So we are in the section. Let's see. We've just. I'm on. Let's see. Oh gosh, what did I do? Okay, so, all right, why don't you read and I'll find us because my bookmarks appear to be, Yeah, actually, Bruce, can you do me a favor? Because we're starting with something saying you'll not wait to give somebody something. But we haven't really, I mean, our last session we read it, but why don't we read the paragraph before that? They're not going really high on the other computer, but there's no reason. The sound that you're making is coming through my speaker into the microphone, and it sounds just as loud to me as me talking right now. So I don't know. Gosh. Okay, and they're saying they can hear me, but not you. How is that possible? That makes no sense whatsoever. Because I hear you perfectly. But that's the Mercury retrograde right there. okay. So, where did you just end? What was the last thing? Okay, all right, good. Could you guys hear Bruce just now, by the way? It might be me. Who knows? I am not a speculative genius when it comes to speaker. I'm working on the computer. Anyway, no, your audio is fine. I hear you. You're coming in perfectly. Yeah, but I don't think that has anything to do with you. Yeah. No, it's not on your. No, it couldn't be because here's the deal, and I'm not going to go into great. I can hear you, and microphone is right here in front of both of us. There's no. Let me turn the microphone more towards me and see if, because I have it kind of turned towards the speakers, but that shouldn't make a difference either. I don't know. Weird. Okay, the burden of guilt is heavy. But God would not have you be bound by it. His plan, which in brackets atonement, forgiveness, for your awakening is awaking, not awakening, awaking, is as perfect as yours is fallible. The inheritance of the kingdom is the right of God's Son, given him in his creation. Do not try to steal it from him, or you will ask for guilt and will experience it. Wow, this is interesting. Protect his purity from every thought that would steal it away and keep it from his sight. Woo. Bring innocence to light in answer to the call of the atonement. Never allow purity to remain hidden, but shine away the heavy veils of guilt within which the Son of God has hidden himself from his own sight. That's in text chapter 14, section 5. And, wow, what, this is pretty good direction You know, everybody says, you know, Jesus doesn't tell us how to do things or how to be or whatever. But he sure does. You know,
honor or doesn't apply to anyone.
Oh, geez. Let's see. That's it exactly. And I just realized I had on the wrong microphone. So that's why they couldn't hear you. I couldn't see because it was only, I don't know which microphone I have it on actually, but it's not the one that I have sitting on my desk. It must be the default of the computer, which probably happens. Yeah, Dave, people are giving me a thumbs up here. So what we're seeing, what we're reading here, is that every day in every way, going along with the light of the world lesson that we have today, our only job here is to give our brother what he deserves, his inheritance. Not steal his inheritance away from him by taking away his purity, by accusing him of guilt, by accusing him of evil, by accusing him of being anything other than the innocent, perfect Son of God. And wow, that is just such a big deal.
It is really an important concept, and I think one of the key phrases that's if you I find really helpful. I try not to you know be a compulsive memorizer, but this one, you know, and I'm going to probably paraphrase as it is anyway. But I mean this idea I think is such an important one, and you know the phrase that comes to mind is would I accuse myself of this? And I think that's usually a real good tip off that if we're you know, whether it's a political figure on TV, whether it's, you know, someone on an award ceremony, or someone cutting us off in traffic, or a family member, or a pet, or a neighbor, or a coworker, or, you know, fill in the blanks. It doesn't matter. I mean, anything that appears to momentarily or for some extended period, you know, rob us of our peace of mind, we have to ask ourselves, am I, you know, using the blame thrower of ego's, you know, insane strategy to make someone else wrong, forgetting that I'm, you know, condemning myself with exact, you know, equal condemnation for what I appear to be, you know, hurling out at the so-called other.
Well,
and, all right, that's pretty much, you know, would I accuse myself of this? I think it's such a helpful phrase, isn't it?
Well, you know what? When you said that, though, Bruce, I recognize that, yes, I do. I do accuse myself of that. When I look at somebody and I say, man, that guy is a liar. Look at how he's trying to sniggle around here and do these things, these devious things. And, oh, they did that on purpose. Do you see that? How awful they are. I recognize I'm doing the same thing. I have done the same thing. I am doing the same thing. You know, I have not been the paragon of honesty through my entire life. In fact, I've spent my entire life lying about everything. You know, I was taught from an early age, like birth, to lie. Because that's the way you get things in this world.
Well, on a more metaphysical level, I think the big lie that we're all complicit in is the lie that we're seemingly separate selves. You know, we, you know, bald-faced, 24/7, 365 for the most part, uphold and you know, are complicit in that lie. We, you know, don't even think about that as being a giant fabrication. Now, it's an innocent one in truth because, you know, we've made it all up. And just as, you know, actors don't need to be, condemned for the roles that they play, neither do we. When you get off the stage and the costumes and come off and the set decorations and props come down, you know, you don't say, oh, well, that was reality, and now you're going to be put on trial for what took place on that stage. No, you just, like, this was a play, you know,
yeah.
Or a movie, or a, you know, an animation, you know, whatever metaphor you like, or a dream. And in each of those metaphors, you know, if you're seeing it from outside that dream or that play or that movie or whatever, you don't say, well, now I've got to condemn those fictional characters. You know, you let them off the hook because they were just playing a role that had no bearing on the reality. And the grand and glorious reality that is the light of the world that today's workbook lesson asks us to remember is that, you know, as the collective one son of God and tag we're all it, you know, nothing happened. There is no guilt. Guilt is just a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem, as Ken Wapnick loved to say.
Exactly, yeah. Nothing was harmed in the making of this movie. Nothing changed about us in the making of this movie. And
yeah.
But you know what? I think a big...
no animals were harmed either.
Yeah, no animals. Nothing. Nothing.
Because
there weren't any animals. But one of the things that's coming up in talking about the holy relationship, you cannot have a holy relationship with those characters. It is impossible to have a holy relationship with a character in the movie. Mm-hmm. And this is something that people get so confused about. You know, they're like, well, I can have a holy relationship. We'll get married and we'll have a holy relationship. Or let's join together in this and have a holy relationship. You can't have a holy relationship with a character in the movie. Characters are characters and they're not real. The only thing you can have a relationship, a holy relationship with, is the Holy Spirit. Because the Holy Spirit is all relationship. It's everything. And so when you choose to join with a brother under the guidance of the Holy Spirit, under the direction of the Holy Spirit, not under the direction of the ego mind who's thinking of how the purpose of this relationship, but just give the relationship to the Holy Spirit and say, whatever it is, this is my relationship with you. My relationship with Bruce is my relationship with the Holy Spirit. My relationship with Carrie and David and Greg and all of you is my relationship with the Holy Spirit. Christopher, it's not my relationship with the person. And that's why no matter what Bruce or Christopher or Greg or anyone says or does, I still can love them completely because I am not loving the character. You know, I may be laughing at the character or saying, oh, you silly thing, how can you do these silly things just like Ken? You know, gosh, how can you think these silly things about yourself and how can you think these silly things about me? You know, don't be afraid, you know, but my relationship is with the whole of you, the being of you, who is just the same as me. And I can love you in that way without ever having, you know, I don't have to care about what you do or what you say. Because, you know, he who sent me will direct me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it helps us get rid of that kind of self-consciousness because we recognize that the little less self that we're conscious of is an actor, and it's a character and a pretty silly story, you know, that we can very gently, non-derisively laugh with our inner kindness teacher and just say, wow, that's pretty amazing. I'm going to share just a very brief thing that happened yesterday that was, I don't know if anybody else noticed, there's an exercise class I try to get to that takes place three times a week here in a little coastal town.
You went to an exercise class? I didn't notice that, but go ahead.
I wasn't sure. Well, I guess I was jumping the gun on that, what people didn't notice. But during this exercise class, which is an hour, we you know, do weight training and lots of aerobic kinds of things. And there's one part where we're doing sort of jumping jack kinds of things, you know, a whole bunch of different exercises. And at one point when I was flinging my arms out, I happened to look out to my right and I saw little bits of tissue paper flinging out of my shirt, my sweatshirt. And I thought, oh, okay, I must have missed, because the other day, you know how usually sometimes you check the pockets of things you put in the washing machine to make sure there's no Kleenex in it? And if you don't, you pay the consequences, right? So it's the old cause and effect thing, you know, ounce of cause is worth a pound of prevention, or prevention is worth a pound of cure, rather. So anyway, I thought I had checked all the pockets really carefully, but there apparently must have been one little, packet of, or a piece of tissue paper, and it got all through the laundry, and it took about 15 minutes for me to shake them all out and vacuum the laundry room floor. But I thought, oh, I got all of it. And then here was out spewing out my sleeve was little bits of tissue paper. And I was kind of laughing to myself. The comment about, I don't know if anybody else knows it, but it was directed to that. But anyway. But you kind of have to laugh at yourself. You know, just like, you know, it's like somebody not knowing the context, you know, looking at that would say, what's that all about? You know, it's like, well, I wasn't quite as thorough as I like to be in loading the washing machine, you know.
Oh, my God. I've had that happen. Been, you know, walking along and, you know, have a dryer sheet on the back of my shirt or something. And
there you go, yeah.
Copy, hey. Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't. But, you know, that's common laundry stuff, so I understand that. But it just makes me laugh. I'm laughing at your whole story because I was envisioning you doing this exercising and tissue flying out from your arms, and it just made me laugh.
And it wasn't copious amount. It was just a couple little shreds, you know. I was like, oh, yeah, I know where that came from.
That's hilarious. Those are the kind of things, my gosh, yes. It's the sameness, isn't it? Everybody is doing the same thing. So I'm going to read in the context. And you know what, Bruce? I'm going to ask a favor that maybe since we didn't really read much the first half hour here, but I'm going to try to fix the recording where the sound was not so good. And if I can't, though, I might just cut out those areas. But maybe we can, if I missed anything from the reading, maybe next week we can kind of recap or resum.
Sure.
But I think we're cool.
Okay. Yeah,
that's always perfect. Why am I planning for next week? What the heck is wrong with me?
Plus if my audio's dropped out, you can preface it with, well, this is an opportunity for meditation and large portions of the first part of the recording, right?
Yeah, that's how people turn off the radio. I mean, seriously. I've seen people drop out of the room, Adi Ashanti, and some of these teachers that have these long, Rupert Spira, these long pauses, and people are like, is there sound? Is there sound? Is there yeah, we're supposed to be, we're just waiting for him to speak.
Without the context, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I do? I take those recordings and I delete those silences.
Oh, I do too. Yeah, anything more than about 5 seconds of silence when I'm editing audio, I usually chop out.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. In the context of that holy relationship, a light shines in our minds, and people will come wanting the love that is being reflected there. That's what I'm talking about. You know, this is if all you're doing is loving everyone and seeing the Christ in them, then people will come to you because they want that. If they're hungry for that feeling, that comfort and love, that's what being the light's all about.
So it is the opposite of the field of dreams. If you dismantle it, it being the ego, they will come.
They will come. And it's true. I think you're right about that. I know the only reason that doesn't happen to me is because, you know, the minute I think about it, I think, oh, geez, then all these people are going to be calling me all the time, and I'm going to have to be talking to all these people, and all these people are going to be showing up, and they're going to want, that's how the ego gets, somehow or the other. I've decided I am afraid of people. The ego tells me that. So, don't be afraid. Be the love. you know, our friend Edie Weinstein, who I think she's talked on here a couple times, but she is a hugger, and she goes out and, you know, she does free hugs and cuddles. She does cuddle parties where people come in, all they do is just cuddle. It's just loving and holding and cuddling with other people, not in any way at all sexual or romantic. It's just connection with other people. I've often thought, oh, I would love to do that, but then I would have all these people that I would have relationships with. And I don't know if I have time for more relationships with people, because the relationships I have with people now take up all my time. But then,
I was kind of trying to remember, you know, it's not about the form, you know, nothing so blinding as perception of form. So, you know, whatever works for people, right?
I guess so, yeah. But I think that's a barrier for me to think that, you know, I don't want more relationships because I don't have time for them. That's not a helpful thing in any way at all, because I really do want all relationships.
And we are all relationships.
Yeah.
If modern physics is correct, and of course in miracles, then we're in relationship to everyone and everything, beyond space and time.
That's right.
End of sentence, basically.
Right. Yeah. And Mercury retrograde and all. I mean, we're there. And then also, that is why we can afford to bring innocence to light, what we were just reading about. Mm-hmm. That is why we can afford to bring innocence to light, because the only thing that's holding me from having that relationship is my belief in guilt. My thought that, you know, I can't have all these relationships. I'm not big enough. I'm not strong enough. I don't have enough. You know, I'm cursing myself. I'm accusing myself of being small, being little, and having not the capacity to be the love of the Holy Son of God. And so this is a huge thing to me, because, you know, I'm just getting like epiphany on March 2nd here of, wow, I'm the one who's holding myself back from the thing that I desire the most because of my small imagination about what I am capable of doing or what I am. And, you know, that is not true. I can be and do whatever it is that I am without worrying about how that's going to happen or what's going to happen if I'm doing that. You know, so what if, you know, a line of people a mile long stands outside my house and people want to come in and see me and hug me, you know, if that's an extreme thought. But you know, so what if that was the way it was? You know, look at, you know, Amma, who that's all she does. You know, it doesn't ruin your life. It doesn't. It just takes away all the things that you really don't want, and gives you all the things that you really do. And what the limit is my own belief that I don't have the capacity to enjoy it. And maybe that's, you know, I'm going into psychology now. Maybe that's the reason that, you know, I'm having such a hard time getting this conversion of the computers, you know, because I have a hesitancy to expand. You know, I have a thought, you know, okay, now if I start doing a class on the manual for teachers, then I'm going to have to show up there every time, and I'm going to have to be in charge and make sure everything works. And if I do this, not that I don't do that all day, every day, here at ACIM Gather, isn't that what I'm doing, like from the moment I wake up in the morning till the moment I go to bed at night, is managing this thing? And is it taking up all my time? Yes. And could that time be taken up by something else that's equally valuable? Yes. So why am I holding myself back into this pattern because I'm afraid of expanding? It can only take up all my time, which already all my time is taken up, and it's not even my time anyway. So,
the whole premise that we all, you know, get sucked into and trapped by, so to speak, is the idea that there's this, a personal self that has all these, quandaries and dilemmas of, what to do with that, that person. And, and what's better or worse. I think it really helps tremendously to when we can remember to, get ourselves, little less selves out of the way. And let our inner kindness teacher, kind of direct the curriculum, and just figure whatever we're doing is the perfect classroom to undo our extraneous beliefs in duality and we they thinking, we get exactly what we need moment to moment to get us up the metaphorical ladder back to the oneness that we never left.
Absolutely. So nothing to stop. There's nothing to stop you. And of course, but of course also because we know that everything comes as it comes. The script is written. So, maybe that was, I had to let go of that thought before I could move on. And, maybe in another part of the script, I let go of that thought a long time ago, and now we're, on national TV and we're at the top of the ratings. That could be too. 24/7.
In some parallel universe, there's strange things happening for sure, and that could be one of them, I guess.
That could be one of them. It's in the infinite universes of Lynn. All right. So, well, they're there.
The number of monkeys at typewriters hammering out our screenplay or our fictional lives.
Exactly. And you know what? That's already happened. I mean, that's the thing that's already hammered out. That's what, when you don't even imagine that the script is so limited. Recognize that if you can think about it right now, that thought was already in the script. Mm-hmm. So if you thought about monkeys on the moon typing up things, that thought was already in the script. Every thought you're thinking right now is in the script, even this thing that we're doing right now.
I think we may have got lunar bananas. And all these asides, but that's okay because we never left.
Right? That's right. That's right.
A perfect trajectory to the home planet.
So yeah, I like to see those moon monkeys. I've been watching the what is it? The Umbrella Society. Oh man, is it good? Okay, so I'm going to start again. In the context of that holy relationship, a light shines in our minds, and people will come wanting the love that is reflected there, and they will recognize in our call what it really means. It's just so crazy. I was just talking with Maureen Muldoon and those guys on this. What it will mean to call on the Holy Spirit, realizing the ego's individuality and specialness was the wrong choice, while the Holy Spirit's atonement principle of no separation is clearly the correct one. That is the call for God, the call for the call of the atonement. And those are in quotes, call for God and call of the atonement. That is referred to here. I am always reminded of the beautiful passage in the scribed pamphlet, Psychotherapy, Purpose, Process, and Practice. And this is this paragraph. And I just think maybe just take a moment and take a breath, which is what I need right now. And maybe close your eyes and listen to this. Let us stand silently before God's will and do what it has chosen that we do. There is one way alone by which we come to where all dreams began. And it is there that we will lay them down to come away in peace forever. Hear a brother call for help and answer him. It will be God to whom you answer, for you called on him. There is no other way to hear his voice. There is no other way to seek his son. There is no other way to find yourself. Holy is healing, for the Son of God returns to heaven through its kind embrace. For healing tells him in the voice for God that all his sins have been forgiven him. That's from the psychotherapy pamphlet.
And I was trying to remember that the only premise for forgiveness, that the only valid foundation, is one where the original idea of there being something that needed forgiveness is recognized as flawed, as a lie, basically, and as an untruth, and not a lie that's necessarily malicious, but just something that we kind of backed into a cul-de-sac and didn't realize that this was a dead end. And once we recognized that, and recognized that there wasn't anything in truth that was harmed by getting off the thoroughfare, we can then be free to say, oh, that was just a mistake. It was an error. It was a no thing that is easily corrected. But once we condemn ourselves and identify with the error, then it becomes a sin, and it's incapable of correction. And because it has been made real, it's been turned into something solid and unforgivable. But the true basis for forgiveness always has to be the recognition that the only thing that can be truly forgiven is an illusion or a dream or a something that's made up. A hoax, a hologram, an apparition.
Yeah. Nothing. And to let go of a dream, I've had dreams that I held on to. I have dreams now that I dreamt when I was a kid, and I still hold on to them as if they really happened. Mm-hmm. And, dreams of, just all kinds of things. You remember your dreams and you think about them and you hold on to them, even though you know they never happened. And just recognize that's this world and this life. We're holding on to a dream that we're being told never happened. We don't have the experience of that. You don't have the experience that it's not happening. It appears so real. But when you can let go of your investment into the meaning of it and the goodness or the badness of it or whatever, when you can let go of your investment in it and all of your decisions about it, all of your beliefs about it, like that paragraph in Lesson 189, put down this world, put down this book, put down, everything, recognize that none of it has any meaning, then you can come with holy empty hands to your God. But you can't put those things down as long as you value them, as long as you think that they have a meaning and that they have worth. And so this is what we have to do, is recognize the valuelessness of the dream, recognize that it's a hoax, recognize that these thoughts that we're thinking and these words that we're saying and these sights that we're seeing are all a story that was written long ago and is over, which is really pivotal. You have to really understand that, or else you can't give up trying to change it. You can't give up trying to make it better. You can't give up trying to correct it, unless you can recognize that there's no possibility of correction. You can't correct a dream. You can correct a memory by changing it in your mind, I guess, but you can't correct a dream and make it a different thing. It already happened. It's over.
Damned if you don't try, though. We all have our recovering dream repair technician hats on more than we care to admit, I think.
Exactly. Me all the time.
But when we catch ourselves, you know, we look in the mirror and see the hat on, it's like, oh, I'm trying to fix the dream again. And just kind of gently laugh, not in kind of derisive or mean-spirited way, but just like, oh, yeah, that's not going to work, is it? And everybody, you know, tends to do that because that's what we came here to do out of, you know, by default. But if we uncheck the default checkbox of our purpose for being in the world, then we open ourselves up to, you know, the Holy Spirit's interpretation of things, which is, oh, I can use this for forgiveness instead of to imprison.
Exactly. So we can take off our make the dream great again hats.
And exactly.
This dream used to be so much better. I'm going to make it better now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So... Where are we? Okay. And then there are those memorable lines that open, for they have come, that section from A Course in Miracles, that quote-unquote otherworldly section in chapter 26 of the text. Every time I read, I just disagree with it, so I know it must be true. Think but how holy you must be from whom the big capital V voice for God calls lovingly unto your brother, that you may awaken in him the big voice that answers to your call. And think how holy he must be when in him sleeps your own salvation, and with his freedom joined. Let me read that again. Think but how holy you must be from whom the voice for God calls lovingly unto your brother, that you may awaken in him the voice that answers to your call. And think how holy he must be when in him sleeps your own salvation, with his freedom joined, and you will draw him in and give him rest as it was given you. That's that's the next line, but not in that section. But that's exactly what it is. Yeah. When we call to the voice for God in our brother, when we call to the light in our brother, when we decide that there's something of value that must be extracted there, and we call for it and we look for it, it will answer back to us. That it can't help it. It's just like, you know, you get with a crying baby who is angry or upset, and you hold them and you hug them. And they might fight, and they might squirm, and they might wriggle around and scream and holler, but eventually they will answer back to that call for love. Eventually they will relax into the heart of love, because you won't not, because you will hold them until they're calm, because you will love them until they wake up, until they are able to rejoice, relax, and rejoice in themselves. This is what we do with our brother. What we're doing, for the most part, I'm doing in the world, is I'm holding on to the, you know, the thing that I want to get rid of. You know, I'm focusing on, you know, this person's such a jerk, and, you know, why did they do that? You know, instead of, you know, looking, calling for the love in them, calling for the truth in them, and seeing that they are the light beyond the character. You know, that's either you're seeing the character or you're seeing the Holy Spirit. You know, you can't see both. Choose one.
Yep. It's an either-or proposition, and the apparent, duality of thought systems. But the non-duality of course, miracles. So, you know, ultimately we're just letting go of what never happened in order to return our minds to wholeness and sanity. And I was thinking about how we could generalize the MAGA hats to everyone's ego strategy is to make appearances great again or make apparitions great again. But that's what our egos do. I mean, and regardless of, you know, any religious, gender, political, cultural, geographic, whatever, you know, economic affiliation you might have, you know, we're all trying to make appearances great, even though they never were. But the again sort of implies the sort of nostalgia. But the nostalgia is misdirected, because the only true, you know, valid nostalgia is to return to the place of oneness that we never left. And we get to that by sameness, by seeing that we're all the same in truth. And that sameness then leads us back to that threshold where, of course, Miracle says, you know, God takes the final step. But we don't have to worry about going poof anytime soon. I listen to and participate in a lot of the online classes that Tim Wise and Lynn Corona do on their School for A Course in Miracles programs. And one of the things that Tim was saying the other day was, you know, referring largely to Ken Wapnick's work over the years, and, you know, reminding us that we don't have to be afraid. Long before that, we will go peace. P-E-A-C-E. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, we'll actually get the curriculum of A Course in Miracles and find that inner peace and stick with it rather than vacillate back and forth. And once you have an unshakable inner peace, there's probably quite a long process of establishing and you know, getting to where that's completely consistent before, you know, we're ready to, you know, tie a ribbon around our classroom here literally, you know, supernova out of the star system kind of thing. But we all have a lot of forgiveness classroom ahead of us. But most of us, you know, I'm assuming that that's, you know, the case anyway.
Yeah. Well, no, I think.
But it'll get better and better. It'll get easier all the time, right?
What you can pretty much assume is that if there's people listening to this, they probably need to hear it. I would assume.
That's why I'm here, because I need to hear this. That's what comes through me, but what comes through you and the material that's coming through Ken, we're reading, it's all helpful. It's seen in the proper context. Huh?
Yeah, and you know what? You just made me think, we're joining with Ken here. We're joining with Jesus. We're joining with Ken. We're joining with all these people that are listening to us, which are quite a few. And in the recording, we're joining with the universe, everybody. This is very well worth doing.
For sure.
And I enjoy it so much. We don't have time to read anymore.
How about just one more paragraph, then we'll get to the next page.
Okay. Go ahead and read the next paragraph.
Okay. And you will draw him in and give him rest, as it was given you. Once you've experienced the forgiveness of your own guilt and feel the love and peace of God, you really could not but want to have that love and peace be extended to everyone else. If you prevent it through your own projection of guilt onto others, then it also means you're going to be preventing that love from being experienced by yourself. Love, if it is real, is one. Therefore, it can never be divided nor separated from anyone else and remain what it truly is. This is one of the prominent themes in A Course in Miracles, and I shall return to it often throughout the book. So, anyway, kind of a nice summary of what we've been reading.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so we start that just flips it to the next page for you, and I'm bookmarking there. And we'll probably actually go back, because the next page starts with all this you will do. So we're probably going to have to go back and remind people of what those things are.
Sure.
But it's, you know,
it'll at least appear to be a non-retrograde motion in our week-to-week readings.
Exactly. Somehow it just seems to be a natural cycle. So I want to thank you so much, Bruce Rawls. I appreciate you so much. And I'm going to let go of the mic for ACIM Gather. And if you want to stay on for a minute, I have a couple of things I was going to ask you about.
Okay.
Let me get...